Last week, I did something that I like to do this time of year. I went to a Vancouver Canadiens baseball game with a couple of friends. It was a special game at Nat Bailey Stadium because the first few hundred people who got there were given bobbleheads of Addison Barger. Now, if that sentence made no sense to you, that's okay. Do you know what a bobblehead is? It's a model of a player whose head bobbles if you give it a jiggle. What's that? Yes, we could use one of those. The thing about that day, though, is that, just to say, Addison Barger used to play for the Vancouver Canadiens a few years back, and now he plays for the Toronto Blue Jays, and was in, of course, the World Series last year. So it was kind of a special opportunity for a special keepsake. And the problem was that the night before, we heard there was a good chance of rain that day. And that put us in a quandary because we were hoping to go to the baseball game. We'd been planning this for more than a month. We wanted to get our special bobblehead and we wanted to see the game. But we also know that our region, our whole province really, many regions, have been too dry this past winter and we really need more rain, right? To avoid a terrible summer of wildfires and possible drought in some communities. So what should we hope for? Rain or sunshine? For the land and our province, we hope for more rain. For that evening, we hoped that the rain would wait. And it mostly did. There was some rain, but the game went ahead, and it was great fun. We all got our Addison Barger bobbleheads, and the Vancouver Seas even won the game. It was great fun. There we are, with Addison. And we still hope there will be lots more rain. I heard people talk about what wonderful weather we've had this weekend, and of course, within 24 hours, we will be complaining about how hot it is, right? What do you hope for? Do you hope for your team to win? There's a lot of that going on these days in this city, right? With the FIFA World Cup on. Of course, most of us are hoping for Canada to win our games. But folks from other countries are hoping for their teams to win too. And really, even if you're a big fan, these kinds of hopes are pretty superficial. Of course, we all hope for nice weather when we're on a picnic or we go camping. But what about more serious things? Surely we hope for fewer wildfires and enough water for every community, right? What do you hope for? What is the shape of your hope? This was the theme as United Church folks from across BC and Yukon gathered last week for our annual general meeting. Rona and I were there in person, and Carrie and others, many others, were there online. You can look at the next slide, please. That was the front of our gathering. Do you hope for healing and recovery from illness and injury? Do you hope for a new job like that teen, the youth maybe a pay raise, or maybe a comfortable retirement? Do you hope for reconciliation within your family where there is tension and resentment and hurt? What is the shape of your hope? What do you hope for? And what motivates that hope? We had a great speaker at the AGM last week who helped us reflect on the shape of hope. You can see her in this next slide. That's Anna Carter Florence. She's a Presbyterian preacher. She's actually a professor of preaching. And she spoke powerfully on four different occasions over our time together. And one of her talks focused on the ancient story of the prophet Jonah. Do you remember the story of Jonah? I hope many of you do, because we skipped over a big part of it this morning. Just gave you a taste of the very beginning, and then we kind of skipped to the end. God called Jonah, who was a prophet, one of God's messengers, to go to the great city of Nineveh and warn them that their wicked, violent ways were going to result in their destruction. Now, the task was not a strange one for a prophet. That's what they often did. They would warn people to stop and realize that their current path would lead to trouble, and call on them to change their ways, alter their course, and find their way back to the ways of faithfulness and love and community and compassion. But the big problem this time was that God wasn't sending Jonah to his own people like usual, but God was sending Jonah to the enemy. These people, the Assyrians, had destroyed Jonah's homeland. They didn't deserve to be warned. Jonah thought they deserved their fate and didn't deserve a chance to change their ways. And that's why Jonah didn't make the short trip to Nineveh. Instead, he tried to run away, far away, to the ends of the known earth at that time. This is the part of the story that we didn't read today, once the storm came up. Jonah jumped on a ship and took off to the opposite end of the world, but God didn't take no for an answer, and so God hurled a great storm at the ship. And almost sunk it. But Jonah realized that the storm was actually his fault. And so, with some work, he convinced the people on the ship that they could throw him overboard and they would be saved. And when they did, the storm disappeared. And then, do you remember what happened as Jonah sank into the depths of the sea? Here's a depiction. There's an angel helping out. A fish or a whale, whatever, swallowed Jonah. He spent 3 days not at the mouth of the fish, in the slimy belly of that fish. And when he prayed for mercy, the fish vomited him up onto dry land. There's Jonah, covered in fish vomit, sitting on the beach wondering what's next. And the word of the Lord comes to Jonah again. Get up, go to Nineveh, that great city, and preach the message that I will give you. So finally Jonah gives in, and he goes. He goes to Nineveh, and he gives them a prophecy of doom. But you can tell his heart's not really in it. "40 days more, he's told to say, and Nineveh shall be overthrown." But it worked. The most amazing thing about this story is not Jonah being swallowed by a fish and spit up on dry land. The even more amazing thing about this story is that the people of Nineveh listened to Jonah's words of warning from God. They all repent of their violence and sin. And the king of Nineveh and all the people dare to hope that God would be gracious and they would be saved from destruction. And, of course, God is gracious. That was the whole point. The Ninevites repent, and so does God. That is, changes their mind. The city of Nineveh is saved. But Jonah? Does Jonah change his mind? Nope. Jonah didn't want to go to Nineveh in the first place, because he knew that God always looks for any excuse to save us, to forgive us. He slinks off to the outskirts of the city and hopes that God will destroy Nineveh, because he can't accept the possibility that God's grace applies to the stranger and even the enemy. He didn't want the Assyrians, whom he hated, to receive God's mercy. Jonah didn't want them to receive forgiveness. Even though he counted on God's mercy and grace when he was disobedient, unfaithful, tried to run away, he counted on that mercy to save him and give him another chance. He couldn't accept the same mercy and grace would be showered upon his enemies. He couldn't accept the fact that God would reach out to them and save those people. And the fourth and last chapter of Jonah is this hilarious episode. I heard some of you snickering, because it is very funny. He's quite the drama king, this Jonah. Jonah goes sulking outside the city, sulking about the wideness of God's gracious love. And the dramatic prophet is so distraught. He says he might as well just die. And still, God is patient and generous with Jonah. God gives Jonah a shrub to provide shade from the hot sun, and Jonah is comfortable in the shade. But the next morning, when Jonah discovers that a worm has eaten up his shade, he's beside himself again, full of anger and resentment about this turn of events and this awesome ancient prophetic fable ends with a final conversation between God and Jonah. God asks Jonah, is your anger a good thing? Yes, the drama king says. And again, I might as well just die. God says, you pitied the shrub for which you didn't work and you didn't raise. It grew in a night and it perished in a night. Yet for my part, can't I pity Nineveh, that great city, in which there's more than 120,000 people and animals too? Can't I show them compassion? What do we hope for? Do we hope for our tribe to win and others to be destroyed? Do we hope for compassion and good fortune for ourselves and failure and misfortune for others? It's hard for us to accept, to remember that often our privileges come at the expense of many others. Do we want sunny skies for our camping trip and never mind about the rain the earth needs? Do we want all our conveniences and our green lawns? Never mind about where the water is needed more. We might have some vague hope for people who are underhoused or cannot afford good housing to have affordable and safe housing. We may kind of vaguely hope for that, but do we hope for housing prices to keep going up so that our properties are worth more? Do we hope for good jobs and peace and strong economies for ourselves, but not for the stranger and the refugee and the people we consider enemies? What is the shape of our hope? May God grant us the courage and the grace to let our hopes grow beyond ourselves and our own needs. May God grant us the same generous grace that God has for all people.